Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
Ever since Alfred Stieglitz, I guess, we've inherited a normal method of presentation of fine art photographs. We mat them, we frame them, we hang them on the wall, in the gallery, in the museum, in our home. It's a standard technique. It's the one we all do, and it's become almost de rigueur the only thing that we do with our fine art photographic originals. We might produce them as a poster or a book, but those aren't originals. Those are commercial products. And let's celebrate that wall art presentation because it works. It's worked for over 100 years. There's no reason for us to stop doing it. But in the editor's comments for Lenswork 173, I discussed a presentation experiment that had allowed me to exhibit a multiple image project on the wall using something called poster hangers. If you're not familiar with that editor's comment from number 173, you might want to go take a look at it because it's the background for what I want to discuss today. The question is, how do you get a group of images that hold together as a theme? Yes, they're individual images in their own individual frame, but the entire presentation is intended to be seen as a group, as a project, on the wall. And what I discussed in that article in Lenswork was my first experiments to do that. Well, that's been up for a while, and one of the advantages I proposed in that article was with poster hangers, it should be very easy to swap out all of the images for a second project, and you could do it on a regular basis and constantly have new work showing in your home, not as individual images, but as a project. Well, I just changed the presentation to a different project. And that's got me thinking about a few things I've observed since the initial installation, since I wrote that article in Lenswork 173. And I've had a number of people over to the house who've seen the exhibition, and I've been observing people's reaction to this kind of presentation, and quite honestly, discovered a couple of interesting and unexpected things about how people approach a wall full of art. So I'm titling this podcast, More Thoughts on Project as Wall Art, as an extension of what I wrote in Lenswork number 173. First, everybody who's been to the house has looked at all the images. Maybe it's during conversation time before dinner or before we sit down and get involved in a social event, but everybody goes over and looks at all of them. But interestingly enough, they always, every single one of them, finds one or two images that they spend more time with than others that connect with them. And they're not always the same images. One person might be attracted to this image, another person might be attracted to a different image, and I find myself wondering what's going on here. I've concluded, I hope I'm right on this because it helps me think about it clearly, but I might be wrong, but I think what's happening is the irresistible urge to rank the images. It's just a part of the way we think. Which one is best? Which one do I like the most? Which one do I think is the stunning image, the number one image of the group? The group I have downstairs is 13 images, so all 13 of them can't be their favorites, but they find one or two that really captivate them, and they spend more time looking at those. But that's not the end of the story. It's not only do they rank them as to which one they like, but one of the things I've discovered as I've talked to them is that if they're not focused in and concentrating on the one image that they think is their favorite or the best, the second most common reason that they spend their attention with one image is because it's the mysterious one. They don't quite know what it is. And so they're looking more intently. They get close to it. They're trying to see the details. They're deciphering what it is that they're looking at. And if they don't immediately know what they're looking at, it gets their attention because they feel compelled, I think internally, to figure out what it is they're looking at. And in that first presentation of 13 images, there was one image that almost everybody zeroed in on because it was kind of hard to see what it was, unless you got very, very close, and it was a picture from distance of a grassy lake bed that was covered with little black dots. And those little black dots turned out to be cows. And you didn't know that until you got close enough to see the cow head and the feet and the tail. And then everybody said, oh, they're cows. The mystery was solved because they figured out what they were looking at, and then they felt free to move on to another image. What does that tell us as image makers? That maybe having a mysterious image, or maybe having all of them be mysterious images, might change the way people look at them because they have this unquenched urge to know what it is that they're looking at. And so the mysterious one became the focus of their attention until they figured it out. Then they moved on. And the next most common image that they zeroed in on was what I might characterize as the essence of the group. Oftentimes, in a multiple image project, there will be one image that is just that just nails it. That's the one that really explains the entire rest of the group. They zero in on that one. That one is kind of a key image. It might be the one that's on the cover of the book, for example, if you're doing a book, or it's the first one they see in a portfolio, a clamshell box of prints that they're going to look at one at a time. The essence of the group is the image that has the strongest pull of the common thread. I'll talk more about the thread in just a minute. So as creators, doesn't it make sense for us to really focus our energies in terms of editing and selection and processing and sequencing and etc. on those two kinds of images, the mysterious one that people will spend time with and the essence of the group that helps them understand what they're looking at? The next thing I realized is a consequence of that business about ranking or selecting individual images out of the group. Nobody can pay equal attention to all the images that are on display, in my case, 13. That just doesn't happen. I'm not sure why, but it doesn't. So what that means is that there are some images that are the ones they're likely to remember, the ones they spend more time with, the mysterious one, the essence of the group, etc. And the rest of the images become a little bit forgettable. They're background. They're the supporting actors in the performance. They're not the ones that people are going to carry with them and remember in their mental gallery forever. But what I do think they will remember, what is actually unforgettable, is the thread that ties all the images together. So if your project is about winter trees, they're going to remember winter trees, but they may not remember every single image. They'll remember the mysterious one, they'll remember the essence of the group, and they'll remember the thread. They'll walk away and say, oh yeah, that exhibition you did of the winter trees, or the one I had up in the wall until just a couple of days ago, was called the Staccato of Life. It's a project that I did as a part of Kokoro, my PDFs. And people were fascinated by the title and the concept and all of that. But just for grins, I asked a couple of people, sort of setting them up a little bit. I said, you know, I really wasn't sure about that one image, whether it should be included in the group or not, because it was kind of on the edge of being a staccato kind of image. And the one that I mentioned was not one that was mysterious or the essence of the group, but I just wanted to see if they remembered it. No one remembered that image, but they did remember the thread. They knew the title of the project was the Staccato of Life. And they remembered a couple of images, the ones that stuck. But in any group, there's going to be images that are of secondary contribution. And that's something for us to remember, because it's so different from the way we do the individual image matted and framed and hanging on the wall. All of those are supposedly our very best images. And we would like to think that every single one of them is memorable. But when you put a group of images on the wall, that's simply not the case, because the group takes precedence over all the individual images. And personally, I'm thrilled by that. I would much rather have them remember a couple of images and that they were impressed by the project than that they tried to remember every single image and then ultimately couldn't. And this brings to mind another thing about putting up a group of images like this. I was amazed how people would look at not the individual image, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but because the 13 images were presented as a group, they felt compelled to know what the thread was that held it all together. That is to say, they spent some time mentally, I think, looking for the connection in the interstices between the images. How does the first one relate to the second one? How does the second one relate to the tenth one? How does the tenth one relate back to the first one? They were looking for all of those connections, which is something I'm not sure people do when they look at a gallery exhibition of my very best photographs, my greatest hits, that aren't necessarily related to one another as a group. But if it's presented as a group, they're compelled to look for the thread and see the connections. And interestingly enough, there were people who pointed out connections that I didn't notice. They saw things that had escaped me, beauty in the eye of the beholder. And they caught things and pointed out to me, they'd say, like, I really love the way these two images work together as this and this. And I'd look at it and say, oh, I never thought of that, but they do work well together. Maybe if I thought about it at all, it was on a subconscious level. But it was fascinating to see how people worked to connect images into a group once they knew it was intended to be seen as a group. And that leads to the next observation I had, which is that with an individual image, people tend to look closer. They walk up to it. They want to see the details. They search through the image from all four corners and through the edges and into the center because they're looking for all the important information in that image so that they can make as comprehensive an understanding of what they're looking at as possible. When they're looking at a group, they do exactly the opposite. They don't step closer to see more details. They step back to take it all in because they're trying to understand it as a group rather than as an individual image. I don't ever recall anybody in an art gallery that I've been to or a museum stepping back from an image and looking at it intently as though that's somehow going to help them understand what they're looking at. But with a group, they do. It's like we have to be able to see all the images at once. Even though that makes the individual images smaller, it's seeing them all together that allows the thread of connection to weave itself from image to image and recognize it as a group. I was fascinated by that. Now, with the mysterious one or the essence of the group, that one that was their quote-unquote favorite, they would get close to that one so they could see the details and understand that image. But after they had done that, they didn't step back to where they began. They stepped even further back from that so that they could look at the entire collection and do so with the knowledge that they've gained by looking at their favorite one or the mysterious one up close. All of that got me thinking about the perceptual difference between looking at a book and looking at a group of images on a wall. And it occurred to me that when I look at a book, I'm still looking at images one at a time, just like I am in a museum exhibition or a gallery exhibition. One image at a time, it stands on its own as a singular unit. Unless in the book, the layout allows more than one image on a page or more than one image on a two-page spread. Then we might see them as a group. But I'm not sure I can remember a book like that. I must have one in my library somewhere. I'd have to go do some research. But most books, the standard books, all the ones that come to mind, there's only one image on a page, usually the right-hand page. And if there's more than one, it's that there's one image on the right-hand page and one image on the left-hand page, and hopefully the two kind of go together somehow, but not always. But there's never more than two images on facing pages, at least that I can remember. So looking at a book is more like looking at an individual image on the wall. Both of those are different than looking at a group on the wall or a project as wall art. Which leads me to the next observation, and this is an odd one. I don't know if other people experienced this, but I did. Now that I've lived with this project as wall art for a couple of months, I noticed something happening as I was looking at it that I haven't heard anybody talk about, and that is a compression of time and space related to memory rather than real-time experience. I've talked about this before, how when the average person goes out and makes a photograph of the landscape somehow, what they're really doing as a premise to that experience is trying to transport the viewer, you, through space and time so that you're standing next to the photographer at the moment they click the shutter, and you see in their photograph exactly what you would have seen had you been standing next to them. Except for they might do some processing to make the sky more dramatic or more contrasty or whatever, which might introduce a little less fidelity of reproduction, but nonetheless, the overall experience is still one of you standing there seeing the world in reality rather than as a photograph. That's not what happens with a group on the wall. With a group on a wall, there's a sequence, but it's not linear. What it feels like when I look at those images on the wall is more what I sense when I'm pulling forward memories. Now, of course, this is my work on the wall, so maybe I'm pulling forth my memories and no one else does this. I'm not sure. But the experience that I have is sort of like overlapping images, the way memory has overlapping moments. And memory is not necessarily sequential in time, nor is it sequential in importance. There's a randomness to memories that come up that is different than looking at an individual image that's sort of painterly-like in a frame on the wall, the way a painting is. When we look at a group of photographs on the wall, the process is kind of like what we experience with memory and the way different visions, different ideas, different memories come up, crowd each other out. One takes dominance, another one takes dominance. They overlap one another. We circle back and pull forth certain memories for a second view, etc. That's what a project on a wall art kind of feels like, particularly after we've lived with it for a while. The trick to that is overcoming the cultural training of looking at one image at a time. And that's where I think the project title has an incredibly important role to play, because it steers people to what they're looking at or what you want them to look at by defining the nature of the group. You don't always have to have a title on a given image, on a single image, although a lot of times we'll put the location and the date it was photographed. That's a fairly common caption, even in fine art photography, particularly in books. But a project title goes far beyond that and really provides a path for the viewer to enter into the project and see the connections and the threads that hold the images together and what it is that you're trying to get viewers to think about and realize and sense while they look at the group. So those are some observations. But there's a few odd questions that have cropped up too that I didn't address in the article in Lenswork 173 that I'm still scratching my head about. The first of which is paper size. The presentation that I made and that I just updated with a new body of work has a bunch of different sizes of poster hangers. There are some that are 9 inches wide, some that are 19 inches wide, some that are 14 inches wide. And so essentially what it looks like is a bunch of different sized images. And for some reason, that made sense to me at the time. But another possibility I realized when I was installing this second group of images is that I could have used all the same size paper and all the same size poster hangers and simply varied the size of the image on the paper. So instead of trimming 13 by 19 paper down to 11 by 14, I could have just left it oversized as 13 by 19 and change the image size that got printed on that paper. And I'd like to know if that works or not, and I think what I'm going to have to do is maybe map one out and see what it looks like So that's a question that I'm still struggling with. The second thing I've learned since I published that article is that the poster hangers may not be archival. Keep in mind, these poster hangers work by having two pieces of wood that have embedded magnets, and they snap on either side of the paper and hold it in position. The top side has a little hanger string that you can put on a nail or a thumbtack or something, and the bottom edge of the photographic paper has two pieces that snap together that just pull down and hold the image flat. The problem is, when I took those off, I noticed there was a little bit of a yellow stain on the bottom of the image that was 3/4 of an inch, which is the exact size of the poster hanger. So obviously there's a question about archival properties of these poster hangers, and it may be necessary to put a secondary piece of paper in there in order to be a spacer between the poster hanger wood or paint or whatever it is that caused that little bit of yellowing in the photographic paper. The second option, of course, is to try to find wood that doesn't do that, that doesn't have that property that causes the paper to yellow. So that's an issue to be aware of if you start playing around with these poster hangers yourself. I love the way they work. I love the way they look. I'm just wondering if I may have to do something to deal with this archival property. And the third question that has come to mind is, normally speaking, with the individual single image in a frame, we size the frame to fit the print. So we determine what the print is that we want to make in the darkroom or when we're printing it out of our digital printers. And then we frame to that size, because the size of the image determines the size of the mat board, which then determines the size of the frame, etc. We go from the image to the frame. We start with the image, and then we size the frame to fit the print. And I suppose I could do that with poster hangers, but I didn't. Instead, with the poster hanger, what I did is I sized the paper to fit the poster hanger so that the paper was the same width as the poster hanger itself. There wasn't a shortfall on either left or right, nor did the paper stick out farther to the left or right than the poster hanger. So basically, I sized the paper to fit the poster hanger, and from there, sized the print that went on the paper to give it a little white border around so it looked like sort of a mat boardy kind of look. And I'm not sure which is the right way to do it. Size the frame to fit the image, or size the paper to fit the poster hanger. I have to think a little more about that. So those are some observations now that I've had this project on the wall for a couple of months and just changed it to another set of 13 prints with a completely different theme. I continue to learn. I continue to think this is a really terrific idea and a great way to get a multi-image project on the wall as wall art. And what I would love to do, if I could find the place to do it, a big enough gallery space that would allow me to do 4 or 5 of these simultaneously, but separated enough so that it was clear each one is its own project. I would love to do that and see how it works, but I'm going to have to find a big enough space to do that in. Anyway, that's some more thoughts on project as wall art.
Copyright 2026, Lenswork Publishing.